Welcome to the DPM podcast, where we go beyond theory to give advice that works for leading better digital projects. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Ben Aston, founder of the Digital Project Manager. So everyone's excited about Agile, but how do you make it work across multiple teams or projects? How do you speed it up and where can it go wrong? And how do you stop it going wrong in the first place? Keep listening to today's podcast to understand how we can scale Agile delivery and how we can make Agile work at scale. This podcast is brought to you by Clarizen, the leader in enterprise project and portfolio management software. Visit clarizen.com to learn more. So today I'm joined by Giovanni Asproni. He's the consultant, the principal consultant at Zulki Engineering Limited. I probably butchered that, but he's based in London. He's a software architect, a programmer, a coach, a consultant with stacks of experience across all different verticals, including telco, banking, oil and gas. He speaks at lots of conferences. He's contributed to various books. So Giovanni, thanks for joining us.
Hello, thanks for inviting me.
And how should we pronounce the name of your firm?
It's actually a Swiss name. It should be Zulke.
Oh, there we go. I wasn't going to get that right.
I butcher it all the time as well, so don't worry.
That's cool. So, yeah, tell us a bit about what you're working on now. We were just talking about it before, but, you know, what does a typical day look like for you?
Well, the typical day for me, in at least these days, is kind of busy. So I started at the beginning of June a new project in which I'm actually following my own advice, which is
very wise.
Yeah, after it was basically with a large customer of Zulke, myself and a few other colleagues, we ran an assessment of a very large scale program they've got. We are talking about 500 people, 57, 60 teams, something like this. And now we are implementing part of the recommendations that is basically providing them with a system to actually gather some project and program metrics to manage the whole effort much better. So it's quite busy. You know, I'm doing technical leadership and then requirements and then reporting to all levels of management in the customer company and writing also some code as it happens.
Nice. And so, I mean, tell us a bit about that assessment process that you go through. So I think it's interesting that you don't just go into a company and say, hey, you need to do Scrum and try and roll it out. But there's an assessment involved, right?
Yes.
What does that look like?
So what happens in an assessment, what we do is try to understand what's going on, basically.
Yeah.
So we speak with people, representatives of the teams, of management at all levels, and try to figure out, what is happening on the ground. So we also do code reviews, for example. We see all the processes the teams follow. We see the way they commit code to the repositories, any things they do for quality. We speak with the managers to understand their view of how things are going. So basically, we create a picture of the situation because, you know, these kind of large projects, they have many, many similarities, but usually the details of the context are quite different.
Right. And so in terms of your recommendations, so after you do these assessments with a large company, how different, though, are your recommendations each time when it comes to implementation? Does it all kind of fall back to the same kind of thing?
Well, so it depends on what we find. I have to say that some things tend to be the same because just because we make mistakes in the same ways as it happens. So just to give you a quick one is usually when companies scale up to very large scale programs, we are talking about, you know, maybe 100 people, 200, in this case 500. I've seen up to 1300 in a single product. When they do that to try to go faster, but generally they don't have the instruments in place to understand if what they're doing actually is bringing any advantage.
Mm. And so, I mean, you talk about instruments. So what are the tools that you use to evaluate whether or not it's the scaling up that they've done by adding additional resources is actually working or not?
Well, we look at various things. So in my article, when I talk about the prerequisites for scaling, we actually look for those things. So we try to understand if everybody understands what they are supposed to do if they are pulling the same direction. You would be surprised how different people often see the goals of the project to be different, you know, so they end up pulling in disparate directions. So in what I'm doing now, so look for the use of metrics. You add teams, you add people. How do you know that you are going faster instead of, you know, without using feelings, but actually real data, for example?
Yeah.
We look at the system design, the architecture, if it suits the team structure. You know, there are many things. Communication channels, which often in large-scale projects tend to be ossified into kind of very formal ways, and then people are unable to solve problems quickly. Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll dive into the your post in a minute, but in terms of just talking about you for a second, I'm curious to understand, you know, from your vast experience of scaling Agile, or maybe even just working on Agile teams, can you tell us about perhaps your biggest screw up that you can talk about, and what you learned from that? Where have you gone wrong, and how can we all avoid doing the same thing?
Well, one I've gone wrong with, it's been, you know, fairly recent, actually. It was not a gigantic screw up, but was a screw up in some ways. And in that particular case, I was sent to the ground to solve some situations. We had problems with some of our teams and some of the customer teams. At Zulke, we work embedded within the customer organization, right, as well. And so many things went well, but then actually what happened was some political situation in the company brought the project to an end for the wrong reasons. So in that case, you know, even if the problem, I guess that the learning there is sometimes, even if we seem to be aware of what is going on, sometimes we are not really seeing some things coming. So we had an issue with some internal political games within the customer company, and we were caught in the crossfire. So
yeah, politics is always important, however much we don't want it to be.
Well, it's important. You know, politics in itself is not good or bad. Yeah, it's just when you put humans together, there is always politics. The trouble is how you use it. Yeah.
Definitely. And in terms of, you know, again, being kind of generic and high level, what if you were giving someone advice who's thinking about, and I think a lot of our audience would kind of be in this kind of boat, you know, they've begun thinking about Agile because that's what customers say they want. Whether or not that's what they need is another thing, or whether or not that's something that they can support is another thing. But what would your kind of top tip be for someone who's thinking about, hey, I want to start working Agile? And I think, you know, most clients would say, okay, what's important? If you ask them, okay, how do you want your delivery, or what do you want your delivery to look like? They would say, well, it's really important that it's Agile. And so what would your top tip be for someone who's, you know, working with a client who's never really worked in an Agile way before, isn't perhaps even sure what it is, but just knows they want to be Agile? What would your top tip be for someone in that position who's tasked with implementing Agile with a client who's not really familiar with it?
I think that the top tip is actually to understand and clarify expectations. So when people say, you know, we want this project and want to be Agile, is what do you mean? What is the need? What problem are you trying to solve? Because agility is not a goal. Yeah. It is a mean to an end, or to several ends. So, and what I find is that often people decide that they want to be Agile because they heard that other companies are doing the same. And by doing that, they are doing fabulous stuff, going very quickly and delivering stuff very fast, which is generally missing the point. Yeah. So it's about expectation management, I think, and clarification.
Yeah. No, I really like that. And I think it's so important that, the goal isn't the process. The goal is delivering value.
Yes.
And delivering value more efficiently and, ultimately delivering results rather than being focused on the way that you get there. Now that can help, yeah. But that's not the end goal. So sound advice. Thanks for that. And can you tell us what is in your toolkit? So in terms of the tools, like software tools that you use, or maybe analog tools that you use when you're assessing and implementing and when you're helping a team, become what I know.
One thing that I actually use is very analog, is my Moleskine. So when I speak with people to assess a project, I'm not generally in the room with technology because, if you open up a laptop, puts a barrier in front of you, you and the person.
Yeah.
And writing down with a notepad is much less threatening. And so this is the main hardware tool that comes with me, pen and Moleskine. In terms of other kinds of tools, I actually use software to, I copy my notes into software. It's called Scapple, the one I use. That is, basically allows you to write things and connect things together, but you can connect everything with everything. So it's not simply a tree structure, right. But it's more a bush or a forest, which I find it helpful because I write down also sorts of thoughts. Actually, this might be another hint. So when you are talking with people, assessing something, it's not important only to listen to what they say. Yeah. It's important to also read the room. So understanding that if they are relaxed, they are tense, if they may be saying something they are not convinced about, it's important to actually read the people themselves as well. Yeah.
Mm.
And another suggestion is when you talk with people in this kind of assessment, you need to do that in a safe environment. So, for example, when I do these things, if I need to speak with developers about me in a team, about their views of how things are in the project, I make it very clear that I don't want managers inside in the room.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And I do the same with the managers as well, because you see, even in situations where people tell you, we are a very open company, everybody's free to express their thoughts and whatever, in practice, it's always more complicated than that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So safety is super important.
Yeah. And it going back to more software tools in terms of running agile projects, do you have a preference for kind of agile project management software tool that you often recommend, or does it really depend?
It does really depend. So in general, what I would say is if you are in a situation where everybody is always in the office, a whiteboard works very well.
Yeah.
And then maybe you can take pictures of the whiteboard if you want to save something online or stuff like this. If you have even if you have a team that is not distributed, but people work from home or sometimes from home, sometimes from the office and things like this, then it's better to have electronic tools. One tool that is very common is Jira. I don't particularly love it because it's slow and has its own problems, but it's better than a whiteboard when you have people that are in different locations. So for me, it is really context dependent.
Yeah. So apart from your Moleskine, and did you say the name of that, your note-taking bush tool?
Yeah.
That's called Scapple.
Scapple.
Scapple. Okay, Scapple. Cool. Are there any other tools that you've discovered recently? I know our audience always loves to hear about new tools. Is there anything else that you found recently that you're like, oh, this is incredible? People should be using this.
Not really. To be honest, I don't even look for that. it's just I'm in a phase of my life and professional life where I'm not really looking for the special tools. You know, many often keeping it simple is the best thing you can do.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I would recommend is the simplest tool that does the job in your context.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Cool. Well, let's talk about your post. And I think this was a really interesting post all about how we scale Agile. And it's a well-known fact that adding more people to a software project isn't necessarily going to increase productivity, as you mentioned just now. And actually, in most cases, when we add more people, often what we see is a productivity drop as confusion starts happening. People get confused about what they're working on, why, how, integration becomes difficult. So there must be a better way, though, to get more stuff done. So Giovanni's written a great post which outlines rules of the law of scaling, prerequisites for scaling, some considerations on team structure. And so if you haven't read the post yet, I recommend go to the digitalprojectmanager.com and check that out. But let's go back right to the beginning and talk about why this is important. And for the uninitiated, for the people who are thinking, hey, well, do I need to know about scaling Agile? Tell us, why should we care about scaling Agile at all? Is this, I mean, you're a consultant in it, you do this every day, but why is it that you, why is it that this is your job? Can you tell us why it's important?
Well, yeah, I'd say that it's important to know about scaling because sooner or later you will come across it. Okay, so especially if you work in big, even medium companies, but especially in big ones, projects for some reason tend to grow big in terms of number of people involved. Okay. In terms of what I would recommend in general is don't try to scale at all. First of all, try to sort out the situation you have at the moment. You know, why do you want to scale? What is the reason? Yeah. Are you sure you can do that? So, for example, in the prerequisites, I put things like, if you don't do those things well, forget about scaling because what you'll have is a bigger mess. Yeah. So, and also it's interesting that I can tell you that all the large scale projects I've come across, including the 1300 people one, that one was amazing. 1300 people with 2000 repositories and just a gigantic thing, a messy one, is usually this kind of projects, you know, you need no more than 20, 30 people to actually do a good job. And I'm not joking. I'm not exaggerating here. So just to make sure, even if there is a friend of mine that once half tongue in cheek, half seriously told me that the number of people to put in, you know, for your project, any project should be the minimum between the number you've got and 10.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
but in general is you really need to work effectively and efficiently to start with before growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, when we're talking about scaling Agile, so obviously the theme that's coming through is keep it as small and as lean as possible because that's the way that you're going to maximize efficiency. That's the way that you're going to maintain clarity on the objectives and make sure you're all kind of delivering value. But beyond that, in terms of the approach or the processes that and systems that you put in place, when you scale Agile and you're working with this 500-person organization, is it always a one-size-fits-all, or do different people and teams need to be managed and have different, architecture of that process to make it work?
I think that one-size-fits-all never works. It really never does. And also especially for large projects, because, you know, when you have 500 people, 1,000 people, maybe 50, 60, 100 teams, the population is so large that invariably you'll end up with teams that have different needs, different preferences, different styles. That said, there is an element of uniformity that needs to be introduced at somewhere. Yeah, now I'll say where, because otherwise it will be impossible to actually understand what's going on from, you know, for the overall project. My suggestion there is usually in general, let the team do work in their preferred way, but what you need is some interfaces, basically reporting systems, or the way of reporting progress, of showing what is happening, of transparency. Somehow there should be some interface that is consistent across the teams. Yeah. Otherwise, for management, it will be impossible to get the hang of what is going on.
Yeah. So, what does that reporting look like? Is that,
you know,
how do you keep that uniform across teams who want to work in different ways?
So there are many ways. So, for example, instead of imposing Scrum to every single team, some teams that need to work in a more flow-based way, probably because they have some event-based workflow. Yeah, let's say teams that are doing development, but also user support, for example.
Right.
They cannot really commit to user support for a couple of weeks. You know, when the user calls, you better do something. Yeah, so it's more event-based. So the teams like these have different needs, but from a high level, instead of, for example, focusing on the sprints or on the flow or something, you could always focus on, you know, what is the throughput in terms of stories, features, epics, whatever you are measuring, yeah? So the fact that the teams are using sprint or Kanban or something similar, you can still measure that. Okay, so you can still do that level of analysis. You can do all sorts of level of analysis, also for cycle time, lead time. You can do levels of analysis of what is happening in the code as well, which is one of the things that I'm doing in the current project. So measuring, for example, from the code base also how the teams interact or more often interfere with each other. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So there are different ways there are many ways to actually do that.
So I mean, talking about them, what does good scaling look like and what does bad scaling look like? It sounds like what you'd propose is giving the teams autonomy rather than necessarily dictating. So dictating as little as possible and just ensuring that the connections between the teams work well and efficiently, and that you're able to analyze across different teams how progress is being made to give management a good clear idea of the velocity and where the project's at. But what else does bad scaling look like to you?
So for me, bad scaling is scaling that is done usually by diktat, you know, somebody in a high up in the management chain decides that everything is too slow, they want to go faster.
Yeah.
Okay. And they throw people at the problem. That is a typical scenario. Yeah. Okay. It's common enough that is worth highlighting. That is the most typical one I've seen. And then, you know, from there, or things that bring to bad scaling, for example, are project planning, where the planning is done based on capacity planning. You know, this is a 100-person year effort, so we'll hire 100 people and we'll finish it in 1 year. It doesn't quite work like that. So these equations don't work. So you need a bit more of a better, a more refined view, of planning.
Yeah.
One thing that I suggest in general, because of course, you know, it's not simply leaving the teams alone. You really need to have the appropriate people with appropriate skills in the team. So, for example, if you have a team of young people that are inexperienced without anybody to actually guide them, they may go off to the tangent to implement something, some little piece of code in a beautiful way, but it's probably not that important in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. So you need to have the appropriate people. But in general, the best way to scale is actually to involve the teams and the senior technical people, basically asking them, can you do with a few more people? Do you need help? Yeah. Have you got work for more people? This is the best way to actually start the conversation. People doing the work are the ones that they know that if they need help or not. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So awareness really.
Yes. Awareness is definitely important. And I would add another thing. I think is important also. This is a bit controversial now. I hope to ruffle a few feathers. Good. So one thing that is important for people in a project is to actually understand what their real role is. So the controversial thing is the following. So if you are talking about software projects, yeah, this is what I do. So this is what I'm an expert on. Now, in any software project, the only people that are actually indispensable, okay, that have to be there at all times are programmers that actually write, people that write the code. I'm not even including testers, yeah? And people that use the system, yeah? And some users. Because these are the two things that have always to be there in a successful system, okay? Now, the fact that these are the only two that are mandatory for a successful system doesn't mean that the others are not useful. So everybody else is optional. You know, project managers are optional. Consultants are optional, like me, or testers, because depending on the kind of project you need, you may or may not need them. Yeah. So in practice, this means that the role of the people that are optional in this context is actually to make the programmers more effective and more efficient, is to enable them to do a better job. Now, if you as a project manager think in these terms, you start asking different questions. So instead of telling the team what to do, you start asking the team, what do you need from me? What can I do for you so you'll do a better job? Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's good. And in terms of then, you know, the best scaled agile that you've seen, can you talk about what you think made it work? What do you think made it so good? Like at its very best, what does that look like? It sounds like it's a team that's you know, empowered, that is, you know, supported by people who are trying to enable them to do their best work. But talk to us about different ways that you've seen scaled agile really work well.
Now, really work well, I've seen it only once or twice, and for not very large systems. Okay, so I'm talking about work with five teams or something like this. So we are talking about maybe 50 developers and testers, something along those lines, in 5-6 teams. When I saw that working, basically it was a situation where people knew what they were doing. They knew what their place in the grand scheme of things was, and also to implement features, functionality to get stuff done, they knew who to talk with in the other teams. Yeah. Right. So there was a level of, if you like, formal communication, but a lot of informal one with people that actually knew what they were doing, but still was, you know, small. The very large I've seen, all of them had big, big issues, and, you know, they could do with 1/10 of the people they had. Simply because they were scaled, you know, as I wrote in my article, they were scaled for the wrong reasons. So they just threw people at the problem without understanding if that was working or not.
Yeah. So in terms of like out the box scaled agile frameworks, like Scrum at Scale, large scale Scrum, what's your opinion on those? What's good and bad about them? If someone's, you know, decided that they need to do agile at scale, because like you said, someone at the top has decided, hey, we need to deliver this thing faster. What about those out the box frameworks, and do they work or not?
I know of some situations where some of these work. I know for large scale Scrum, in not in projects where I was directly involved, but where some other consultants that I know were involved, it worked, but they saw that working only once or twice, basically because it was the appropriate context for the framework. So in general terms, I don't like these out-of-the-box frameworks at all, because basically they try to cast your project into their shape. So a characteristic of any framework is that for them to work, they assume a surrounding context, okay? So if your surrounding context doesn't fit the framework, you are in for an interesting time. Yeah. And also they tend to focus a lot on a structure. Yeah. But they don't focus enough on what people actually do day to day. Yeah. Mm. And the last one also, this is actually my biggest bugbear with the out-of-the-box frameworks, especially with Safe, I have to say, is that they are designed in a way that makes management feel a warm feeling of control, but is not really helpful for the people actually doing the work, using the framework to, to do the job.
Yeah, no, I think that, I think that I would say the same thing as well about Scrum, just as a whole, in terms of a framework. And I like what you say about, you know, any kind of framework or process assumes this context, and that context has to be true in order for it to function properly. And I think sometimes management might think, well, the solution to this is that we just need to do Scrum because, you know, it's all written down on a piece of paper. It's easy to understand, and that we should be able to ship stuff faster and more efficiently. But it doesn't take into account, the team, the project, the client. You know, it doesn't take into account anything really, other than just it's just describing a process. And I think sometimes people can get caught up in the process or the framework rather than just thinking a bit more intelligently about, hey, well, let's work out a process and a framework for us that works for our team, that works for this project, that works for our client and the limitations that we have. And I think people can be quite nervous about that, thinking, but it's not Scrum. Scrum says we should have, you know, sprints no longer than 4 weeks. So we shouldn't, you know, we've got to follow the rules, right? And actually, we can be a bit more nuanced about it. You know, following the rules just means you're following a framework. It doesn't mean that you're delivering value better or faster or more effectively.
Yeah, I agree. I actually agree. In fact, the first time I actually, long ago, so I've been doing agile development since 2001. I got involved in that when I was still in Italy. But the first time I've actually introduced extreme programming in a team, at that time, extreme programming was sold as like 13 practices and things and stuff. But the way I approached that was, with the team, we agreed what our goals were, and we started small using the one or two practices that gave us value. Yeah. Okay. And then we could learn them, and then we could build on them, maybe adding some stuff on top. Yeah. So this is actually another important aspect. When you go with a framework that has quite a few things to that you have to use at the same time, you also get overwhelmed by the amount of stuff you need to learn just to use the framework. Yeah, and this is especially true with things like Safe or Scrum at Scale. It's just too much.
Yeah.
So ideally, even if you start small, any project, if you start small with a small team, you know, you can actually learn everything from the very beginning. Then you can grow in an orderly way, you know, improving your process, adapting as you go, adopting new practices, adding new people if necessary, but doing that with actually a reasonable way. You know, we are humans. We can't learn too much at the same time. Yeah.
We can't learn too much at the same time. And if we suddenly have a framework forced upon us, we can go through the motions. But then what you find is that people think, okay, well, yes, we're doing this Scrum at Scale thing, and you know, on the surface, yes, they're doing that, but actually they're just reverting to the same way that they are working before, and you're just creating overhead because people are trying to adhere to certain practices or processes that actually is divorced from their real work. So people, it then becomes this smoke and mirrors where people are, you know, trying to not get in trouble, but really just want to get on with their work and do it the way they were doing it before.
Yeah, I agree. And I, you know, as a consultant, I see this all the time.
Yeah.
We were doing Scrum, we do the stand-ups, and then the stand-ups, everybody says something, but nobody is actually listening at any point because all they want is to go back at their desks and continue with whatever they were doing before. Yeah. Or retrospectives that become whining contests, you know, people start to moan and whine and protest, then leave the retrospective, no actions.
Yeah.
Things like these. Basically, they go through the motions. Yeah. Without understanding the reasons for doing that, or without understanding how to do those things in a way that is actually providing value.
Yeah.
And in fact, this is what many companies do nowadays with the Spotify model. Plenty of companies now go with the tribes and chapters and things. Is that? And the funny thing is that, as far as I understand, I've never worked at Spotify, but I understand that even Spotify doesn't use the Spotify model because they continuously adapt their processes to their needs.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I know, but the great thing about the Spotify model, though, is that it feels like it makes sense, right? And so people watch the video, which I think is a really helpful video, and we'll put this in the show notes, the Spotify model. It makes Scrum feel like it makes sense at scale, or at least shows how, you know, it feels agile. There's pretty pictures and, you know, it's lots of circles of people in groups and working together. But the reality is we have to create a process that works for our teams, that works for the projects and the type of work we're working with and the context. And I think that's what's coming through in our discussion for me. Like, context is so important, and we can't kind of put blinkers on and ignore the context. We need to embrace that context. And when we do that and treat our teams as not just, names on a piece of paper, but, you know, accept the fact that people are going to work differently and different teams are going to have different needs, then it's going to be a lot more effective.
That is very important. And one thing actually that I think in references of my article, there is a book that I strongly suggest that is called Six Simple Rules, which is interesting because I've used those rules. And the first one, I've used those rules in my consulting work. The first one is, before doing anything, you know, any changes, know what your people do. Yeah. So don't assume they are doing stuff in a certain way. Just go there and see what they're actually doing, the difficulties, the problems. And then from there, you can start actually creating something that makes sense for the organization. Yeah.
Mm.
So instead of, assuming, and then coming up with pre-made solutions.
Yeah. So for project managers, so most of our people listening here will be people who manage projects. They're project managers or producers or product managers. For someone in one of those ancillary roles who's, you know, they're not producing code and they're not a user, what would be your, you know, most important takeaway for them? What do you think, as someone who's trying to support the process but not get in the way, but, you know, help their team do better work, what's the most valuable thing that they can do to provide most value to the team?
Well, I think the most valuable thing they can do is actually understanding what the team needs from them. Yeah. So just ask how you can help them. And I think that I recommend project managers. By the way, I'm one of the agile people that actually likes project managers because, you know, the fact is that project management work is important, especially when you have medium, large projects. Yeah. Somebody has to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not like we are agile, we don't like project managers, go away, and then everything is a mess again. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing that I would suggest also to project managers, because I see that this is often missing, is assume that the people working on your project are doing their best in their context. Yeah. So don't second guess people. Ask them.
Right.
And then you'll find that you will have plenty of help to provide. Yeah. Because especially programmers, they probably don't want to get involved in anything to do with budgets, schedule, or things, you know, various kind of bureaucracy documentation that has to be done is important. But, you know, some of the people involved simply don't want to do that. Yeah.
No. No one wants to be ultimately responsible for the budget, the schedule, or the statement of work. And I think, again, it's refreshing to hear you say that when You know, most conversations about Agile, nobody's really talking about those things. But you know, they're central to our world in that, you know, someone's paying for a project, wants to know when it's going to be delivered, and wants to know how much that will cost and what exactly they'll get. And that's something that in most conversations about Agile is kind of glossed over, and it's kind of assumed that, you know, this is just an internal team working on something. There's endless budget, endless time, and no one really cares about exactly what's going to be done when. So I'm glad to hear that.
Those are things. Yeah, this is also why personally I'm skeptical with many conversations in the no estimate camp, because some of these people talk about, you know, you can't do estimates. You have to do to have a best effort there. People want to know these things, you know, your customers. On this, in this respect as well, for the work of project managers, when they want to give schedule or forecasts or something to the customers, ask the people doing the work to do, to provide the estimates, and don't ask them to give you better estimates if you are not satisfied with the number. Okay, so if it is too long or too expensive, just don't ask. Do it again and give me less. Yeah, because when you are doing that, what you are doing is you are not asking for an estimate; you are asking for a commitment, which is a different thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you are not convinced, my suggestion is ask questions. You know, why would it take so long? Can you explain, please? Why is it so expensive? So, but I have to be genuine questions. And if it happens to be, you know, if that is the best estimate, what you need to do is actually to have the guts to defend your team in front of your customers.
Yeah.
If you do that, your team will love you for that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I think those, it's so important that, as project managers, we're not just doing top-down estimating where we're, you know, we've got 100K, so, you know, trying to slice the pie into different pieces and then force the developers into that. But, yeah, I like what you're saying about, you know, the it is just an estimate, and I think the communication around estimates is what's so important. It's, hey, this is an estimate. We think we can deliver it within this time, but we're working with technology and it's complex. So it is important that we communicate that to the client, and it's important that we interrogate the team in a nice way. Yes. But you know, when we get an estimate from a developer that seems really large, you know, more than 40 hours a week's work, that we break it down. But then we also ask the developer, you know, why are you giving me this? Why do you think it's 40 hours? Can we break that down and try and break it into those smaller chunks as much as possible? And then keep asking those questions. And I think that's where a project manager's role within an agile, whatever that means, environment is so important. It's because our role is communication. We're communicating with this hub of communication between the teams and the clients and the customers, making sure that we're providing clarity in terms of vision and direction. This is what we're doing and why we're doing it, and this is why it's important, because it's going to deliver this value. But also in terms of clarity of communication, like, this is how long we think it'll take, how much it'll cost, and what we think we can do in the time that we've got. So Giovanni, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great having you with us.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
And I wonder what you think. Have you tried scaling Agile? How did it go? What worked and what didn't work? Tell us in the comments below. And if you want to learn more or get ahead in your work, come and join us. Come and join our tribe with DPM membership. Head to thedigitalprojectmanager.com/membership to get access to our Slack team, templates, workshops, office hours, ebooks, and more. And if you like what you heard today, please subscribe. Take a couple of minutes to leave an honest review for the DPM podcast on Apple Podcasts. But until next time, thanks for listening. We'll